Mom, stop! This is like scarring me for life. Okay, can we just get this over and done? Oh, Yaka, don't want to know that. This is like weird, Mom. Oh my god, this is gross. Oh my god, Mom. Oh, Mom, stop!
My mom was a porn star.
Something a little bit different today. This episode ended up being so long, it's been split into two parts. So you get the first part today, and then later in the week, I'll release the second part. Enjoy. G'day, everybody. How you been? It's Honey, Miss Honey Anal Verka. No Mazza today. No, it's lockdown where the border is closed, and you might remember from previous episodes, Mazza lives in another state. So it's just me. Figured you'd rather I put something out there than nothing. But anyway, so calling these episodes My Mum is a Porn Star, Mum Unleashed, because Mazza isn't here to make me behave. But anyway, I'll be good, I promise. I might even use the occasional big word just to really, you know,
throw a curveball in there.
And I did say alone, but I'm not on my lonesome. I have dragged an old mate in to have a yarn. So without further ado, let me introduce Aussie porn star, escort, fetish provider, and dominatrix, multi-award nominated, internationally published, you might have seen her on the stage of Sexpo, she is Violet Divine, otherwise known as Lady Divine.
Hi, how are you? How's it going?
Not bad, hanging a little to the left, but you know.
That's all right.
So, Violet, no holes bar here. We take all types, so hence why I invited you on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
We got no standards.
Both of us together have no standards, and usually this would be going a lot more haywire than it will be. But
yeah,
To a later date.
So we actually had a different topic planned for tonight. But then when today rolled around, Violet was having a bit of a bad mental health day and really wasn't in the headspace to cover the topic we had discussed. And so not wanting to waste this opportunity, seeing being able to actually see a person to interview during lockdown is actually quite tricky, she said, why not let's talk about mental health and how that affects sex work. Don't mind me, you know me, I'm always tripping over my words.
It's all right. I'm on my second beer, probably the same here.
Yeah, and which I thought brilliant, because mental health and how it affects sexuality is huge to me. I'm like really, really passionate about that subject. But as Violet was saying to me, she goes, it's a unique set of, situations, how it affects those of the sex workers. And the reality is that a lot of sex workers have mental health issues, not because we're fucked up and that's why we joined the industry, unlike what stigma tells you. That is not the reason at all. The reason is that sex work gives more flexibility than the average job. So people with mental health issues mightn't be able to work a normal job, but they might be able to find a way that sex work can fit in around their health needs to make that job for them work for them. So
yeah, it definitely creates a lot more freedom for people with mental health issues. For example, you know, you're having a bad mental health day, you ring your boss up, they're kind of not going to understand why you can't get out of bed that day.
Yep.
Whereas if you don't have anything booked in, nothing's forcing you to, there's no obligations and there's no added pressure there. So yep. In a way, as much as people say that sex work oppresses us, in so many more ways, it gives us freedom.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Relate to that myself as being a person that lives with post-traumatic stress disorder. That's been a huge... Yeah, I basically couldn't do another job. No other job has the flexibility to allow me to work, you can't just, as you say, you can't just chuck in a sickie every time you have a mental health day.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the biggest issues that I found trying to work a normal job. It wasn't, you know, the fact of like they just don't understand. It's also the added stress of having to be somewhere between, you know, 9 and 5 doing probably a high stress job that people aren't cognitively able to deal with.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
On top of all that.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, I know myself. I couldn't, you know, the mental exhaustion from having to work with mental health, the hours of a 9-to-5 job would cause me to relapse very, very quickly. I go downhill. If I try to push myself too far and make myself too do much, I go downhill really, really fast.
Yeah.
Where if I can just manage my little snippets.
Yeah.
Like, I only do 4-hour shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other job, when you start your job, you know, I started where I worked. I explained my situation. They were really awesome with me and went, okay, yeah, that's cool. I only do 4-hour shifts. What other job can you rock home and go, give me a job? By the way, I can only work 4 hours and I can only do that a couple of times a week and I can only do this and I can't do that. And
yeah, yeah, no, exactly, exactly. And like what type of job can I turn up to where I'm full speed for, you know, 2 weeks and then for the next 2 weeks I'm called in sick.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing like that. And like especially like somebody like me, like, you know, I really did honestly give it a red hot whack.
Yeah.
At doing CIV jobs, I was a chef and I was also a property manager. And I found that in those type of high stress jobs, it just made me deteriorate 10 times more.
Yep.
I can't actually physically go and sit somewhere for, you know, 8-9 hours. I can't do it. It just sends me absolute batshit crazy. And also because like I'm a perfectionist as well. So you get, if you're in like a high stress level job and then you get obsessed with it.
Yep.
Any normal person's mental health is going to deteriorate, let alone someone that already has pre-existing.
Yeah. So would you like to tell us about what sort of mental health challenges you're facing? What are your mental health, I don't know, issues, labels? How
rap sheet?
Rap sheet. That's about it.
I say rap sheet. I say mental health rap sheet. So I have quite a lengthy one. So I have type 1 bipolar. I have borderline personality disorder. I have complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And I have agoraphobia. And I think that's it.
Okay. So no garden variety anxiety and depression in there, or they're just considered?
No, that's what the agoraphobia has stemmed from.
Okay, rightio.
So it was general anxiety and then just because of the environmental stuff that I'm going through right now, it's developed more so in agoraphobia.
Okay.
More so than just really intense anxiety.
Yeah. So for people like Mazza, she does actually listen to the episodes after we do them. So
wait, can I drink beer? Do they hear me drinking beer on there?
People, I'm sure you'll be forgiven. Okay. I'm sure people that listen to Bogans talk about sex.
Like, I'd honestly, if you're offended, if anyone is offended by me drinking beer right now, I just need you to do us a favor and just turn the podcast off. And just never return.
Okay, maybe return another episode.
Return another episode when I'm not here. But Bogans are Bogans.
I know Mazza doesn't like big words. She hasn't, you know. Basically, break it down. For the people like Mazza, they would go, what the fuck is that shit?
Yeah, so agoraphobia is basically to the point where you have so much anxiety you can't leave your home.
Mm-hmm.
The thought of leaving your home and your premise and your not safe place and going to a place where there would be a lot of people brings you immense anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much a phobia of like you run screaming,
but
it's a phobia in which you're so incredibly uncomfortable. It's kind of like a germophobia side effect. Like you're just incredibly uncomfortable, you get very overstimulated and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So that's I know, like, believe it or not, because I come across as fairly functioning now. Before I did learn to manage my PTSD. Oh, fuck me, jeez. I'm sucky with acronyms. So post-traumatic stress disorder. I had to do a lot of work for several years because I struggled with similar things, being able to leave the house. But my funny thing was I could hide in crowds. If there was like just me and one other person, then I'm like fucking shitting myself going, they see me, and freaked the fuck out. But I could hide in crowds going, this is a town where nobody knows me. Nobody knows me. Nobody knows me. They can't see me. I'm okay. Yeah.
Everything's fine.
But yeah, the absolute terror, not only the shaking, the tears, you break into actual tears, but I'm if I get really bad triggered, I'm a rocker. I'll literally like sit there and grab handfuls of my hair and rock.
Yeah.
So that shit's fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm also just like incredibly overstimulated, and all I hear and see is white noise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just kind of look like I'm incredibly dazed.
Yeah.
And my partner used to had to basically hold me up and walk me through.
Yeah.
The shopping center and stuff like that, or just have to go to the shop themselves.
Yeah.
Because I just, the thought of being near people and out of my house, just not good.
Yeah.
Not a good one for me.
Yeah. I think that's another thing that's interesting with sex work, especially if you work for yourself, is like along those lines is for me, the leaving the house was no longer an environment that I could control and that I might run into people, because some of my trauma has a lot to do with having people turn on me. Like there's all sorts of layers fucked up. That was just one of the things that happened in one of the last layers of trauma that somehow is just anchored itself in those triggers. These people, you know, that know you, judging you, looking at you, blah, blah, blah. It fucks in my head big time. Although you wouldn't notice that I'm managing good these days. I forgot where I was going with that, actually. It was almost going to sound intelligent for a minute.
Half the beer.
Nah, it's fucking gone, eh? It's gone. Squirrel. There's the ADD kicking in. Squirrel.
Yes. A cat jumped up on the couch. That's what did it.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah. Louis, the cat, is also here with us today. And about 5 minutes ago, he decided to play with every noisy toy in the place. So if you hear that going on in the background, thank Louis.
Or just a hand. That's also Louis.
Yeah, yeah. Louis's behaving now. So for me, yeah, leaving the house is part of, I'm not in an environment I can control anymore. Whereas in sex work, I can control my environment. I may have a client coming in that is a variable, but that's the only variable sort of thing. And I sort of know what I'm stepping into. And there's still that sort of, but I can control my environment. I can mitigate the risk. I can mitigate the triggers. And I know nothing's going to totally blindside me out of the possible things that trigger me. So therefore I can step into that situation and go, okay, I can cope here. I can deal here.
This is what I found hard moving to Melbourne.
Yep.
Because when I lived in Western Australia, I worked from home,
mm-hmm.
In a very secure building, and I like knew all my exits and everything like that. Whereas like coming to Melbourne where you basically have to work parlor or offer an outsourced in-call, and I'm not suited to parlor work, and outsourcing an in-call is just way too anxious for me.
Yeah.
Because the anxiety that comes with that, and then also the fact that I'm still in a place where I don't know my exits.
Yeah. Outcalls fuck with my head hardcore.
It's yeah. Yeah. And that's where it really needs to be, you know, decrimmed in Victoria because the laws are just so detrimental and just make people in really, really, really unsafe situations, because I rather go to someone else's house than have to friggin' risk the anxiety and everything else of doing something that's not legal.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I get the point. So, we're just to clarify, if we are legalized in Victoria, which means we're perfectly legal as long as we abide by certain ways of doing things. Whereas decrim would then open up our options of doing things, so we could provide our own in-call instead of an outsourced in-call, which, you know, is got to do with licensing and stuff like that. But anyway, we could offer our own in-calls, which then we control the environment, which we can put in our own safety measures, all these sorts of things. Whereas if you go to an out-call, you never know what you're stepping into.
You don't.
No.
You can put as many safety, security things in play. I know some people that even will have an entire security team go and scope out the place.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, it's not your premise.
No, it's not your premise.
It's not your thing.
Yeah, and what if on the other side of the door he's got a group of his mates ready to...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like the anxiety of that.
Yep.
When you already suffer with so much...
Yeah.
Anxiety is and can be debilitating.
Oh, completely, yeah,
completely debilitating.
And then if you get triggered while you're in there, and then your body, some people might go into flight and some people might go into fight, some people just might freeze up
and dissociate,
and then exactly. You're in a dangerous situation
where you're not in control, but you can completely are aware of everything that's happening.
Yeah, and yet you can't physically control your body to get out of that situation. You're just frozen in the spot, just whatever, and there's nobody to call for help.
Exactly.
So
if you already have prior exposure to an event that makes you dissociate, or if you have like a personality disorder where you can dissociate, getting put in those situations 99.9% of the time, you're just going to dissociate and let what's happen,
mm-hmm.
which again, it just causes more problems.
Yeah, it just adds another layer of trauma
that's already on a layer of trauma, which is then going to enhance the dissociation disorder a million times more also.
Yeah.
So not only with the decrim, they need to think about the safety of us, but they also need to think about the trauma and the emotional impact that it also can have on us.
Yeah, yeah. And we are an essential service. As much as society with its stigmas would like to say we're not, and that somehow if you magicked us away, society would be better. Fuck off. Wake up to yourself.
There would be a hell of a lot more crime and a hell of a lot more wars if hookers didn't exist.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling that right now.
I'm terrible with geography, but is it Staten Island at New York? Well, I don't know. One of those islands that's got to do with fucking New York, fucking America. I don't know. Not here. I don't know. Fuck, I don't even know the names of all the islands in Australia. But anyway, one of those islands that's part of New York, but it's its own little jurisdiction to have its own little laws. There you go. That's geography and law explained to you real good like.
Look, I got lost in there, not going to lie, but go on.
So basically, they accidentally legalized prostitution, as they call it. Fuck, I hate that word. But they were trying to get rid of street sex work, and in doing so accidentally legalized it to be indoors. So everybody just went indoors. It was accidentally legalized. But during the time that it was legalized, rape in that area dropped 30%.
Wow, okay.
And then when they fixed the loophole in the law and it went back to being illegal, the rape figures once again rose back up again.
So there's this saying that I really, really like, and it's no bad whores, just bad laws.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect representation of that.
Yeah.
And during this podcast, you'll probably hear me say words like hooker and whore. I would just like to mention that those words are preserved for a certain group of people to use.
Yeah. If a non-sex worker uses them, it's slanderous.
It's slanderous, yes. I'd just like to point out that, yes, you may have heard me just say the word hooker and stuff like that, but unless you are a sex worker, especially a full service sex worker, don't refer to us as a hooker.
Yes.
Or a prostitute.
Like
we are a sex worker and an escort.
Yeah. If the politer ones of us will politely educate you, the not so polite ones of us might stab you in the eye. Yeah.
So I'm just going to say now, because I say it so blasé, but it's taken many years of trauma of me claiming back that word.
Mm.
And that's not just many years of my trauma. That's many years of many sex workers' trauma behind that word. So
fuck off. It's our word. You can't have it.
Fuck off. It's our word. We work fucking hard for it. So this went from mental health to politics real quick. But yeah, don't use that word.
Yeah.
But also give us better laws.
Decrim, allow us safe work practices, and that helps the whole community, basically.
It does in every way, shape or form, especially like I find with fetish providing, and this is why I won't just say I'm a dominatrix or a BDSM professional while I'm a fetish provider. The amount of trauma that I've helped people go through using kink and BDSM, especially as a tool, has been some of the most wonderful and remarkable and things I've ever seen and will stay with me for the rest of my life. It's 100% essential.
Oh, yeah. Hey, BDSM, and I might actually get around to telling my story one of these days, but and how vital it is to my story. But for the population in general, there's a lot of people, mental health and sex is actually really strongly interlinked, as much as we try to deny it in our society. And if people aren't finding healthy ways to achieve sexual release and intimacy, because intimacy and touch is an essential human need, you go fucking mad. You literally go crazy without it. You can die from that.
No,
shit.
You can. I don't know the exact specifics at the top of my head, but I'm sure if you looked into it, but there was this psychological study in, I'm going to gather Russia because, again, questionable ethics and back very early ages, where there was an orphanage with young babies and they split them up into groups.
Mm.
And 50% of the babies were completely cared for normally by nuns. The other 50% got everything they needed, like warmth, food, nappy changes, but the nuns had to wear gloves when handling them.
Mm.
And 100% of the ones without affection died. Mm. Like, that is how vital human touch, companionship and intimacy is to humans.
Yep.
And to think that we're not vital is ridiculous. Like, if a hairdresser is vital and essential, we sure as shit are.
Yeah, we sure as shit are. We help keep you sane, not just looking good.
Yeah, just so you know, blowjobs are real jobs and they're essential jobs. Blowjobs are essential jobs. Yeah. Just with a lot of PPE at this moment. Oh, yeah.
God.
You basically, you know, this is how I've thought about it. It's like the Jewish wedding ceremony blanket thing they use, and it's just a hole.
Oh.
Hole.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking that.
Yeah.
But me just in a biohazard suit.
Well, I have touched on this because I've put some thought into this.
Oh, what's your thought?
I still don't think it would work.
Okay.
Because at some point you need to take off that biohazard suit, right? So if they're contagious, then their COVID particles are out on the other outside of your biohazard suit. So then you have to look into your whole routine about where you're taking it off, and also the air where you're breathing. So because if you're breathing the same air as that person and they're inside, you're breathing in the COVID, because the micro droplets float around for hours. The full size droplets that when you sneeze or cough, they will float to the ground, but your micro droplets that come out in your general breathing, especially heavy breathing, which you tend to have during sex, they float around for hours.
So, hypothetically thinking.
Hypothetically.
If you had a hole in a wall
and
you basically had just a man's heart. No, a glory hole.
Yeah.
But you can't really fuck on a glory hole.
You can't do glory holes. Have you seen glory hole porn where it's just got the
Yuska Sclavia ones?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so as long as you protected the membranes and then
they were laying down?
Yeah.
No, but they would have to, I want their head outside.
Yeah, but you have the glory hole wall with their body through it, just their legs. So
it's just their legs and
just their legs. So you'd have
so it's like cut off at the stomach.
Yeah, yeah. And then you'd have to sanitize the legs and area afterwards, and you'd have to protect the membranes because obviously COVID can pass through the membranes of the genitalia.
Yeah, but obviously everything would have to be covered. And that's why I was thinking of the like the Jewish lovemaking ceremony because it's just a whole sheet with just a tiny little hole. So if you, and then with a condom and then that sheet.
Though I am a fan of the internal condom better than the actual condom. But those fuckers are both so expensive.
You could do, I want to try this internal condom. You and Chasey keep telling me about it. And now I want to, where do I get this? Next time you get some, can you get me one? Because I want to try this internal condom shit.
Do you go with to
my
the-
many...
You go to the
male Melbourne. Partners that I have.
Yeah. You can still use them with female partners. Do you?
Oh my God! Can you do it with female partners? So then, when they finger you, that like you can't get.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And because the outer ring stays outside of the body, it covers part of the vulva as well.
Holy shit! You just changed lesbian sex. Bum, 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 bum. All right, we need to do a podcast on this. I'm going to send it to everyone I know.
Well, I do want to get you back in future to discuss
our original plan.
Well, there's our original plan because we were going to talk about body fluid tracking tonight, but I really want to discuss dental dam usage with you too because I, listening back to the podcast episode that I did on condoms, I realized my explanations on how to use dental dams was limited and not really in depth enough. And I don't have a whole lot of experience with dental dams. But you, my lovey. Oh, no, you
I fucking have way too much experience with them fucking things.
So we'll get you back in for that topic as well. I suppose we better get back onto this topic. This topic, I think, is going to turn into extra long.
This is going to extra long. We'll take one breather.
Yeah.
So we get our thoughts recollected and so Violet can get a beer.
Yeah, yeah, because beer helps. Yeah. Should we actually get onto the topic?
Get back onto the topic.
Okay, rightio. What is it like for you to get ready for work when you're having an episode? And what would you call an episode?
So like for me, an episode would just be being like incredibly unmotivated. It would also be me wanting to like cut my own skin off because like I feel so self-conscious. Another one might be that I just like can't stop crying. I don't want to get out of bed. I just can't face seeing anyone in that moment, but it's gotten to a point now where I've like worked out a routine where I just have to get completely in my Violet zone. I think that when you've been doing this for a while, especially with mental illness, that as much as I don't use my persona as a persona, she is me without mental illness, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So I just have
it's
to
just
put
the best bits of you.
Yeah. So I have to really put that hat on and go through like a really big ritual of getting ready, like listening to certain type of songs, using certain type of moisturizers, wearing certain types of lingerie clothes to just really get me in that headspace. Because if I don't, I'll cancel our booking.
Yeah.
You know. And that's happened many a times. Or like if I want to work, I might wake up and be like, I want to work today. And then
Yeah, your body's gone. You may want to, but we got other plans. You're fucking kidding yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I stay in bed for 3 days and my work phone's off for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know.
Because this is the thing. I don't think people understand our work is really high in emotional labor.
Yeah.
And it really is sucking our emotional wells dry. If you're not really good at managing that, it just sucks the life out of you emotionally and then you're just left fucked.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
You can't work.
Yeah, you can't burnout, but yeah.
Yeah, you burn out so quick. Like you can't work.
Yeah.
It's not a good booking.
No.
No good of it. Like I've found that if I forced myself to do a booking and I haven't been in the right headspace, I just become really kind of like aggressive and like zone out, Louis. I'm not really at my best game and stuff like that. So like you can really tell as well when I'm having a low kind of thing, and I won't do it now because it's so much more emotionally taxing trying to socialize and do that when you're just already debilitated.
Yeah. And the thing is too, this constant, we get all these fucking time wasters sitting at home, yanking their dick, friggin' sending us messages and everything, just at us, just nagging at us, like these little fucking piranhas just nipping at us there, and just emotional little fucking piranhas, nip, 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 sucking us dry that way, even before we get to work.
Yeah, yeah.
We think, like, all our different socials that we've got on our emails, our work phones,
Instagram,
and everything.
Instagram, Twitter, emails, websites.
And they're on there, nipping, 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 nipping. And they have no intention of booking. And they will go to such severe lengths to jerk your chain.
Yeah.
And they're sitting at home getting fucking off on it, going, whatever fucking thing is going through their brain.
And it's honestly making you melt.
Yeah.
Like you want to throw your phone to a wall and smash it.
Yeah. And you never want to see another man again.
Ever. And like one thing that really gets me is like if I'm having a low period and someone's incessantly messaging me.
Yeah.
And it might be a shit inquiry or a good inquiry or just like a polite, like, oh, just following up, bye. But it fucking drives me insane. It makes me melt 10 times more because I feel like I'm being suffocated.
Yeah.
And that's also a thing like with, and I know we're going to touch on the difference between parlor and independent, but we've kind of touched throughout.
Yeah.
But like being an independent worker, my phone has to be on 24/7 basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't deal with that.
Mm.
So, and when I can deal with it, it just makes me fucking melt and I want to burn it and I want to smash it and I never want to look at another person ever again because also people get really entitled.
Oh, fucking oath they do. What the
so fuck is that? So fucking entitled and so incessant and so, and it's like, bro, like, did no one ever teach you fucking boundaries as a child?
Yeah, and they wouldn't like, do that to their doctor. They wouldn't do that to their hairdresser.
And I've had this conversation with people, though.
Yeah.
And apparently these people actually do that shit to other professionals. It's not just us. Apparently cunts are just fucked.
Fuck me.
Like, apparently everyone's just an entitled fuckwit. They just thinks they need everything then and now. It's not just us. We get it a little bit more than because
yeah,
you
they're
know,
thinking with their dicks.
They're thinking with their dicks. And, you know, when someone's horny, they need something now, yesterday, not when you can do it. So.
And I've found too since with being a BDSM provider, fetish, fantasy, dominatrix, whatever label you want to put on it. Oh my God, some subs, they take it to a whole new fucking level. If you thought full service fucking clients could be needy fuckers, oh my fucking God, some subs. Have
I
you
don't
found
do
the
it.
Same thing?
I just don't do it anymore.
You don't do, what do you mean? Explain that to me.
I just don't do needy subs anymore.
Oh, so you just won't accept the bookings? You won't?
Yeah, like if someone gets too much, I'm just like, no, I'm never seeing you again. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I just can't. My mental health cannot physically deal with needy, whingy, whiny subs. It's very clear what I expect of my subs.
Mm.
And independence and initiative, well, obviously independence to a certain degree and initiative is one of them because I cannot deal with people that need permission to wipe their ass and then incessantly message you nonstop with no actual tribute or gain to you personally.
Mm-hmm. And it's just the thing, like me, myself being a mother, I could sit there and go, fuck, I have to take this booking. I have to put food on the table. I've got to pay for the roof over the head. And then I can go and force myself into a booking with a client like that going, I need to. But then that client sucks me dry of whatever emotional reserves I have going, considering I run on 3 cylinders at the best of time. Then I get home to my kids and then I fucking lose it. Like, I have high needs children. You know, I need to come home and have my shit together to be able to parent my child. My parents shouldn't have to deal with emotional, violent, yelling, whatever kind of outburst from me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I dealt with an arsehole earlier that day.
Yeah, but this is why I don't take those clients on anymore. Because not only does nobody wants to go home in top drop, especially when you have children, but with my borderline personality disorder, I have an incredibly short fuse and an incredibly violent short fuse.
Yep.
So the reason why I can't take those bookings is, in all honesty, it's a safety risk for me and the client. So when I sit there and I say, oh, God, I don't take whingy whiny subs anymore, I don't say it in a, like, it might come off snobbish, but I say it in a way that, in wholeheartedly, I've been down that track before and fucking people get hurt.
Yeah. Cause this is
and it's traumatic for me to hurting someone. It's traumatic for someone getting hurt. And I'm just fucking not doing that anymore because I know within myself, I'm only 25 and I'm nowhere near along in my mental health journey to have the cognitive and emotional and social skills to deal with being absolutely infuriated and not lash out in that moment.
Yeah, because that's the thing. When, as BDSM providers, we are using implements of torture.
Exactly.
And we're doing it in a healthy way, in mitigated risk under consent. But if you go into a booking like that, and then that client pushes you too far, then you've got an implement of torture in a enraged person's hands with no self-control because they're in an emotional fit and blind fury.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I can very much, the point you're making, I can very much see that. It's a safety thing. It's not not an entitled, I just won't take them. It's a like, I won't take them because I will seriously cause them harm.
Yeah.
If triggered too far.
It's a security risk, you know. Like, I feel like saying that on a podcast may have shot me in the foot and now people think that, oh my God, don't go see her because she's a fucking psycho. But the thing is, I have many things in place.
And the thing is, you have the
maturity. To stop that.
Yeah, you have the maturity and the self-awareness to put yourself in the situation.
Exactly. And I know the triggers. Mm-hmm. I know my triggers. And I know the signs of if I'm being pushed too much in a booking.
Mm-hmm.
And dominatrix or not, I have no fucking shame untying someone or whatever and just walking out of the room.
Yeah.
Because one of my biggest fucking rules is, there is no room for ego, and that goes both ways.
Yep.
I rather my ego take a little bit of a hit and be like, you lost it on that one, you went at your 100%, than me fucking hurting someone.
That's it. And I think it's another reason why people really need to do their research, I feel, about before they see a BDSM provider, is because
100%.
Our profession tends to attract narcissists, you know.
Oh, yes.
You know, if you're being a dominatrix and you're all like, I'm a goddess, worship me and everything, that's going to attract personality types that literally do think, I'm a goddess, worship me, I can't do fucking wrong.
Yes.
And I think that's a really big reason why people need to research, because they need to make sure they're with a safe provider.
100%.
Not one where their ego of my shit don't stink.
Yes, yes.
It's going to kick in and going to stop them from walking away from a dangerous situation.
It's funny you say that. So in my BDSM, I will not see a beginner without doing a compulsory intro to BDSM session with me.
Yep.
And guess what one of those topics is? Screening a mistress and making sure they are a match.
Yes, because it's a thing.
People
don't. And a mistress can be a good mistress, because you said a match. So it's not only finding one that's a safe mistress, but one that's a match
for you.
Because there's different types of submissions. Yes. And different types of domination.
Yes. Like, for example,
yep.
I'm a dominatrix who does not offer kinky GFE, relief, intimate worship, nothing like that. And that's quite odd for a dom.
Yep.
Whereas, for example, Ms. Honey, for a shorter list, what don't you offer?
Oh, I don't do poo in my mouth. I do poo in theirs.
That's what I mean. So for a shorter list.
I will not only shit in your mouth, I will get in there and play in it with you.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, you know, I go get into some pretty freaky deaky shit stuff as well, but won't touch your dick.
Yeah.
Won't touch your dick or get you off.
Yeah.
So there's different type of mistresses and you need to find your match.
Yeah.
As well as are they safe? And by doing that, researching.
Yeah, definitely.
Research, ask around. Are they award nominated? Have they won awards?
Mm-hmm.
Is there stuff about them on forums?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I teach people that if you negotiate a booking or you go to a booking and they don't do or say any of these things or they do something this way, get the fuck out, run.
And I think also if you approach another dom very respectfully and ask, you know, would they give a reference for another dom or stuff like that, I think most doms would be understanding enough to reply if they, yeah. they can, because we know we're a small community and we know each other's dirt on each other, put it basically like that. And there has been cases, I think, of people winning awards that possibly, I think you need to, an award is definitely something to consider, but I think it's not enough. I think people need to be aware they can't just go, they're award winning, they're the one for me.
No, this is why I said award nominated.
Yeah, yeah.
Not award winner. Yeah. Because award nominated means that they're recognizable.
Yeah.
But who wins that shit doesn't really mean much. Just go for someone that has the recognition enough
and I get
to be nominated.
Yeah, I get what, or that's known, what you're saying, or but I'm just wanting to clarify for somebody that might not have understood the difference that the award's not enough. They need to do other research. And I've had people approach me sort of thing going, you know, I'm really after this sort of booking. Can you recommend somebody? And I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, and I've had so many people that are like, can you do this? And I'm like, nope, but honeyanal@gmail.com.
Yeah. You send me all your sick and twisted fuckers.
I send you.
I love them.
Like, I know every time someone like messages me, it's like, oh, fuck, I can't. But actually, I do have a friend that can very much help you.
Yes. Whereas, you know, if it's something like kidnapping, well, then no, I don't have the resources to do that or the experience, but I do happen to know who I'd probably consider Australia's best and her expertise at kidnapping. I'm not going to say her name on here because I don't know the legalities around that, but mm-hmm. she's fucking awesome.
Very awesome.
And if somebody wanted that sort of thing, I'd be straight up going, look, this is the person you need to see. I don't care if they're in another state or you got to save the pennies. If that's the experience you want, this is the person to see.
The legalities. Cut this out.
Yeah.
Are we talking about them?
Yeah. Yeah, she really is. And she's so huge on consent and everything. I would recommend anybody to her. I have utter faith in her that anybody at any level she'd be able to accommodate their needs. Whereas the person you were thinking of, they're only hardcore, extreme, experienced people I would ever recommend to her.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, yeah, if, yeah, she's...
I want to meet her.
Yeah, she's a very intense person to meet. Awesome. I met her and she tends to rub people along the wrong way because she's so extreme and so set in her opinions. But I think she's amazing to talk to. I get along great with her.
Well, everyone thinks I'm a cunt when they meet me, so I guess
everybody probably get along. I'm a drongo.
Same.
Yeah, fuck it.
In my tans.
Yeah.
And my long neck.
Yeah, here drinking beer. But, like, fucking, it's just, I'm a bogan with a brain. I'm edumacated rather than educated.
I'm street smart, shall we say? Yeah, I'm what they call the street smart.
Yeah. That shit. Done a lot of living.
Done a lot of living, not a lot of life.
I'm trying this straighty 180 stuff. Been trying the last 10 years. Yeah, fairly working.
No comment.
No comment.
No comment. mental health addiction and sex work. No.
The funny thing is, talking about mental health addiction and sex work is I actually have a history with addiction, and sex work actually keeps me off the drugs. Whereas this has this whole stigma that, oh my God, sex workers are druggers and everything. It's like, no, sex work actually keeps me clean.
Yeah.
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 So
can't do this job safely if you're on.
No, no. Exactly.
You really can't.
You can't.
But yeah, same with me. Like, it is this massive stigma that, like, a lot of sex workers are addicts. And the sad reality is that a lot of sex workers are addicts.
But there's probably more that aren't.
Yeah, there's more that aren't. And you'd find that the people that, like, are sex workers and are addicts, they usually use sex work for their addiction.
Yeah, most of the addiction came first before sex work is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then sex work fueled the addiction more.
Yep.
Very rarely, there's also the case of people that become sex workers and they're not meant to be sex workers.
Yep.
And then become addicts.
Yep.
And then you have people like you and I who are addicts and it saved our fucking lives.
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, with this, I couldn't be off my tits being a stripper working 6 days a week and escorting.
Yeah. So for me, kink itself was my huge saving grace with my mental health, because I wasn't getting any better. It'd been years since I'd had my mental breakdown and I wasn't getting any better. Like, literally, I still couldn't care for my own children a lot of the time. My mother would have to come down and care for my children because I literally could not care. My mental health was that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only when she had taken my daughter, one of my daughters, to help try and lighten the load for me for a while, and I happened to stumble into the kink scene, and then kink turned out to be the thing that helped me start to heal.
Yeah.
And helped me understand my mental health in ways that all the, you know, the normal things that psychiatrists and doctors and shit are telling you and everything, all this sort of shit that was fucking useless for me and never helped me all these years since I'm a breakdown. But yet kink helped me understand it, understand triggers, learn to manage it and everything, and help me heal. I find, put it this way, when I was in the psych ward, they said to me that creative people, if they do not have a creative outlet, they literally go crazy. They go insane because it's just the way their brain works. And that myself being a creative person, because duh, artist, yeah, that also applied to me. Now having been on the journey that I've been on, I can see that not only are kinky people wired that way, I can see it in children. I can sit there and go, ha-ha, when you're older, you're going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a perverted way. I mean that in a way of they've got so much more, because society's not preparing them to with any skills or knowledge to be able to find what they need.
They're suppressing it.
Yeah. So, not only we wired that way, I was only when I found kink, I could find the what my brain needed to be able to balance. Like, I normally, if it's not COVID, I go to my Shibari class once a fortnight. I can be as depressed as fuck. I can walk into that class trying to hold back tears, putting on my brave face for the world, my mask, and having absolutely feeling of like there is no purpose. The whole world is just... I walk out of that class, a 2 hour of tying somebody up, and I'm balanced again. I'm grounded, balanced, a functioning person again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just rope.
Well, I find that rope is so healing as well.
Sorry, I'm having to crack another beer, people.
I'm going out. I'm pausing this for one second.
Okay, so we're stopping for a beer break. Be back.
I need a beer.
I do believe we were talking about kink, actually, people being wired for kink and how it actually helps balance us.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I think that for the first year and a half or so, I definitely was going through my first manic. Bipolar episode. And then it all kind of started crashing down after Sexpo.
Yeah,
So I did 8 suspensions in 3 days. And I'd never been suspended before that.
Mm-hmm. You look beautiful, I might say.
Thank you. Also might add this, I'm not a switch.
Yeah.
I'm a rope switch, apparently.
Yeah.
But not a switch. And it was the first time I'd ever really been in that situation. And then 3 days, two days after that, I ended up in hospital for 5 days with something called circular vomiting syndrome.
Yep.
And then that was the end of my first bipolar manic episode, and I came down.
Yeah.
And then I also recently helped a friend who went through a very long manic episode doing rope, and it ended her manic episode.
Yeah.
And brought her back down as well. I've also done a lot of therapeutic rope sessions with clients and friends as well. And it's healed so many.
Yeah.
So many. And also our friend JJ on here. Yeah. You know, had a traumatic experience happen to me while I was on tour in Sydney. And JJ just so happened to be there on a completely irrelevant business trip.
Yeah.
And came and did some rope work with me. And if it wasn't for him, I fucking God knows what would have happened from then. So like kink work, especially rope work, is just so therapeutic beyond anything. And stemming off rope work and stuff like that, when you come to people that have been abused, they tend to be abusers themselves or put themselves in abusive situations.
Yeah, because there's that whole triangle.
That triangle, like either don't do anything and you're not affected, or you become an abuser, or you become a victim, masochist.
An abuser or an enabler.
Whole kind of thing. So it is also a healthy way for somebody that is an abuser because of the abuse they went through to do it in a controlled and consensual and positive environment. Mm-hmm. And it's also creates a space for a trauma victim to relive their abuse in a trauma, I mean, in a controlled way with the appropriate aftercare, et cetera, so they can essentially relive and reprogram their trauma by kink.
Mm. And this is another one of my things, my pet peeves, is when people go, "Ah, don't need aftercare," or aftercare is not a thing.
Fuck off.
Oh, my.
I have heard stories that some pro-doms aftercare, like the whole attitude on it is, "My aftercare's the FPOS machine."
Yeah. Ooh. So like, if you fuck hear,
off.
If you hear a dom say that, start red flag. Thinking red flag. Yeah, that could be one of those narcissists.
I teach this in my intro to BDSM as a red flag.
Oh, good girl. Good girl. Because fuck, man. Because like you were saying with, you know, it was those couple of days later you start the vomiting. Because when we participate in kink, we're dumping all these chemicals in our brain, sort of thing. So all this shit that, like, as you would know, like, I'm, you know, I'm just explaining it for people like Mazza who's going to listen back and hear, "What the fuck are you talking about, Mum?" I can just hear her sitting there going, "Fucking what, Mum?" But anyway, yeah, it's all the when you take drugs, all those chemicals you're dumping into your body to create those highs, your body can already produce those naturally. And when we participate in kink, where our body's producing those chemicals, whether it be your endorphins, your bloody, or your I'm no good with big words. There's a fucking whole
dopamine, endorphins,
and a whole heap more. Anyway, and they dump into the brain, they dump into the blood system.
Serotonin
is another one. All those sorts of things. And then it takes up to 48 hours, sometimes even more, depending on how well your body processes those chemicals and how big a dump it was.
Well, my last suspension was on Sunday and I was in hospital on Tuesday.
Yeah. And see, and that's that sort of perfect, so like it lines right up with that
and it's
sort
like,
of thing. Your body's like, processing all that.
Also, you know, just as a disclaimer as well to this, Avalon was the one who tied me at Sexpo.
Yep.
And me being suspended is in no way correlated to the vomiting. It was the other psychological things that were going on with me, and it had nothing to do with his rigging whatsoever. So just as a disclaimer, it had nothing to do with the rigging or the aftercare. I was given proficient aftercare. All my boundaries were in place at all times. And I think a lot of it, as you were saying, your body holds a lot of drugs and stuff that you take. My body was contorted and bent and stretched in ways that had never been before.
And it's releasing all those built up sort of...
And lactic acids, like, and also...
And also trauma.
Trauma
Your body
as well.
Holds trauma in different parts of the body. Yep.
Especially my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I think the one that did it to me, he did this entai with it. He called, you know, he was so excited because it's called the Persuader. And I'm, sorry, I'm very bad at Italian accents. It's called the Persuader. I'm going to hate it. Unfortunately, Avalon didn't realize I have double jointed shoulders and I loved every bit of it because I'd never been stretched so good in my entire life. But I think the release of all the acid in my joints as well did that.
And this is the sort of thing, like, there's no such thing as, safe rope's not the same thing. Rope impacts. Rope, whether it's a simple basic tie, you just can't just jump into it and go, she's rope, she'll be fine. There's no
exactly.
big deal. You need to know you need to know your anatomy. You need to understand how this shit is stored in the body and how it could affect that person tomorrow,
the day after, or
even the day after.
And this is like, I had somebody message, like I had a friend recently message me on Instagram and they're like, oh, like a mutual friend who doesn't know anywhere near enough about rope to teach properly. I was like, is it going to teach me rope? Like, what should I do? And I just said, first things first, before you do anything, you need to learn rope anatomy.
Yeah, fuck oath.
Because I know rope anatomy, you know, as you being like, oh, yeah, put some rope on, show me, right?
Yeah.
I have been rigging for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I know rope anatomy to the back of my hand. Mm-hmm. Shibari is one of my favorite things to do professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. And about 2 weeks ago, I thought it was a great idea to drunk suspend my friend doing a tie that I had done many fucking times. Drunk before, my go-to tie, and I completely felt her radial nerve, and she has now not been able to lose her left arm for 3 weeks. I cannot stress to anyone enough to learn your rope anatomy and to stick to the rules and the guidelines, you know, no matter what.
Yes.
Especially with rope.
Yes.
I know better. And as I said, I have done that tie many times before and I still fucked it up wicked ways. Rope anatomy is the biggest and most important thing other than learning how to actually tie someone.
Oh, yeah. And I love you dearly. And so people always like, you know, friends of mine that are habitual, shall we say, or lifestyle smokers or drinkers or whatever, when I sit there going, hey, you shouldn't do my BDSM under the influence, and they sit there going, well, I'm a grown adult, I can know my body, I know I've been doing this for years, and that's the perfect example. And like, I love you dearly, and then you tell me that happened and I'm just going, you suspended her drunk? And she's like, yeah, but I've done it before. And I'm just sitting there going, you suspended her drunk? You fucking what? And yeah.
No, but like, I'm not the type of person like, yeah, I suspended her drunk. Well, you know, it's fine. She's got a fucking wrecked radio nerve. No, I'm actually genuinely fucking traumatized that I did that.
I'm not poo-hooing.
I'm just reinstating that it does not matter how much you know, how long you've been doing it, and how many times you've done that tie under the influence. Shit still goes wrong. Rope anatomy is still, you can still fuck up with rope anatomy when you're fucked. Because I know rope anatomy to the back of my hand. Do I know where fucking exactly where the fucking nerves are when I can't really see straight? Not really.
Yeah.
Don't tie drunk.
Yeah.
Don't text and drive. Don't text, drive, and what is it? Don't text and drive. What is it? Don't drink and drive.
Yeah. Don't
drink and tie.
Yeah. 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 And this is the thing. Those people who have done it before previously going, I know my body, I know what I can do, eventually will catch up with you.
Yeah. 100%.
As you've had to learn the lesson the half way.
No. 100%. And like, this is what something that I've taken in a lot of parts of my life is that I've well and truly run out of luck. And I ran out of luck that night, and no way in fucking hell will I ever do that ever again.
And you at least have the integrity to own up to it.
Oh, yeah. I will not sit there and say that, nah, I owned up. I owned up immediately when I did that wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Owned up. The funny thing is the person it happened to is not traumatized by this at all.
But I am. Yeah.
I'm immensely.
And that's the thing. I think that sets.
I also ruined $200 worth of rope, but we weren't getting that.
Oh, ouch. ouch, the wallet hurts at that one. But that's the sort of thing. That's the sort of integrity.
From Dave Fabari. Yeah.
But this is the integrity that you want to find in a mistress. You want, when you're looking for a BDSM provider, whether it be a submissive provider or a mistress or a master or whatever.
If they think they're a femme fatale goddess monster machine that does no wrong and has never done any wrong.
Yeah, we all do wrong. Doesn't matter how long we've been doing it. Accidents happen and we need to swallow our pride, own up to those accidents and realize where we could do better next time.
This is why I'm scared of roller coasters. It has nothing to do with the roller coaster and it has 100% to do with human error because humans fuck up. Machines really kind of don't. And people need to realize is that we're not BDSM machines. We fuck up. Things don't go to plan.
Yep.
And we sometimes misjudge shit.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And if you ever find a mistress that has never done any wrong ever and has never hurt anyone and is not traumatized, something's fucking seriously wrong. Because like something is seriously wrong because I am traumatized by a lot of shit.
Yeah, and if their mistakes that they've done to a person hasn't left a lasting impact on them to go, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Especially when you're a pro-dom. Because I know being a pro-dom, there's the littlest, tiniest things that have gone wrong that are honestly nothing.
Yeah.
But to me, they still keep me up at night.
Yeah. And that's why in my sessions, I tend to lean towards being overly cautious. And that does mean that when people come to see me and go, beat the shit out of me, do this to me, do that to me. And I go,
No.
Sorry, I need a couple of sessions with you to understand your body, your reactions, if you're actually going to speak up when things are starting to
And also, wrong. I like say, I'm like, I always go slow with people. Like, it takes me a couple of sessions too because I'm like, my 1 to 10, my 5 is probably your 10.
Yeah.
Because I know that my 10 is fucking brutal.
Yep.
And the amount of people that can actually handle a 10 can count on literally this many fingers.
Yeah.
Just for everyone at home, I'm holding up 3.
Yeah.
So it takes a couple of sessions to know someone's body, not only know someone's body, but know their limitations. Because these cunts don't fucking say shit. Their ego ruins all of it. Since the moment they walk in, they want to be the biggest, baddest sub in the world.
Yep.
And they're not.
And they're
they
not.
They can be trained.
Yep.
But they're not.
And they're I think this is something that people need to have realistic expectations when going into a session going, this is my fantasy I want to achieve. I think they need to be realistic that it's probably not going to be achieved that session.
My 3 favorite words to say to someone before a victim. Booking, humanize your fantasy.
They're big words. So can you break that down?
Humanize your fantasy. So humanizing your fantasy is basically, think of your fantasy. Is it possible? If it is possible, how difficult would it be to achieve? Mm-hmm. Is it realistic to ask this of somebody?
Mm-hmm.
And is there outside factors involved? Like, for example, if we're doing something in public, there'll be non-consenting public members around.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another good example would be somebody would come to me and be like, I want you to butcher hook my toes and hang me from the ceiling. Theoretically, that sounds pretty cool and brutal. Realistically, your weight from 2 hooks hanging from your big toes, the weight's going to make your toe split and you're going to drop.
Mm.
So humanizing your fantasy is ensuring your fantasy is realistic, ethic and consensual in all parts before you come to me with it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Right. Oh, I love this sort of stuff and I could crap on about this a bit more.
I know, especially me and you. We can sit here and talk kink and BDSM for hours. And I love that this was supposed to be about mental health.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe
we literally just turned it into kink anyway.
Yeah, I said, oh, you know, I want to cover a bit of kink. And she's going, no. I really want to focus on mental health today because my mental health is my headspace. You know, I'd really be able to explain what I'm feeling today. I'm going, okay, cool, let's do that. And we've gotten.
But then I had a couple of beers and then we started talking about kink.
Yeah.
This is a mixture of kink and mental health.